Hello, everybody. Welcome on in to Heroes and Thieves. This is episode 22 of season 2 of the World of Vardia. And we've come a long way. Our journey has been so fun to this point. And we're not even halfway there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, we're at the top of the mountain and we're not even halfway there.
Not even halfway up.
Yeah, I lost my train of thought. I probably didn't even have one to start with. So, this is it. This is us. We're going to do this again.
Yep, here we go.
I don't think I have anything to say at all.
I do.
Okay.
So, I forgot to mention last episode, but I had put an Instagram post saying that if you comment some ideas, I'd chat you out on the next episode.
And then did you say that?
I did. And then I didn't shout them out. So.
And then you betrayed them? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So here it is this time. I apologize for last time. Just totally forgot. But that's the way it goes. But the post was about... the question was, how do you manage to create a nice, smooth storyline that doesn't get too world-shattering too soon? So basically, how do you avoid power creep as late as possible? How do you put it off for as long as you can before you become, you know, the next god-slaying
machine?
And once again, we shouted him out before, but once again, Regulus RPG came in hot. And after reading this comment again, though, he's basically just describing the greatest game ever made, EverQuest.
Okay.
Because he says, have your world like the first phase of Spore, which I've never played Spore, but he says the PCs can play around in their little pond. They can fight creatures of similar strength. They can flee from tougher creatures. And they can see shadows of even larger things going on, or like bigger creatures. They can see them. Then eventually the PCs, they get to the next tier where they fight things they previously fled from. They can easily beat their foes and they can interact with the next tier of now visible bigger threats. But always in the forefront is things that are even stronger. And that's exactly what EverQuest is.
Yeah.
So, that's why it's the greatest game of all time. But that was his thought of, if you're a DM, how to avoid feature creep is just to one little thing at a time. But that's not the complete answer, though, because, I mean, it can still get out of hand. So,
yes, of course.
But, I mean, it's a start just to take it one thing at a time until... I guess then you have to take a step back and think, okay, where did we start and where are we now? And if you're only on session 10 in the first campaign and you're already like slaying all the big bads and all that, you might want to reconsider how you got there.
Yeah, how did we get here? What's going on?
That was too fast. What happened?
Yeah, and that leads me to want to talk or have a conversation about a very common thing in video games, and more specifically online, like massive multiplayer online video games, like World of Warcraft, Final Fantasy, EverQuest, less EverQuest than the other two because it's less story driven than the other two.
Right.
It's more just like, here's a bunch of stuff to explore, which is kind of nice. And they kind of avoid this problem, actually, which I'm about to present to you by not having a story. So... at least in the game, because in World of Warcraft and in Final Fantasy, when you're playing the game, you start out as, you know, an adventurer, you're level one, you start doing quests, you know, killing chickens or whatever you're doing. Right.
Right.
And then you gain levels, you gain stuff. But by the end of the expansion or the story arc, you're killing the big bad guy. Okay.
Like yes.
You are the champion. Everybody praises you. You save the world. And then they release a new expansion, and in the new place, no one knows who you are. And it's like, wait a minute. I'm the most popular person in the universe right now. Yeah. I saved the world. And like characters from lore who have done less than you, right? They are more famous than you. And they're remembered forever as like, oh, the greatest characters of all time, but they died in this big battle. And it's like, wait a minute. I've saved the world multiple times and I'm not heralded as such. And he didn't do anything like compared to me. So it's interesting because I don't like it. It makes like it all feel irrelevant, right? Because when you do all this stuff and it's like, well, in a month when the expansion comes out, my character is going to be a nobody again. It's like all that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff I worked for doesn't matter because the writers didn't write it in. They don't have the people recognize, at least like nod their head, and be like, hey, yeah, you saved the world once. Welcome. It's like, who are you? Go kill some dogs. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. Just save the world.
But these are level 61 dogs and you need to get to level 70.
Right? Like it happens all the time. And it's like, is that avoidable? For, I guess, translating it to like books and stuff, like how do you do that? I don't know if it translates one-to-one with writing.
I don't think it does because like video games are a unique medium. I think, okay, so a couple of thoughts. I think Final Fantasy does a much better job of it because they actually own it. Because from day one or day two, whatever, I don't remember, but very early on in the MSQ, the main story quest, you are the Warrior of Light. So you are the chosen one. And then as you move in through the expansions, everyone knows it. And everyone praises you and they feel like they're lucky to be around you. Like your little sidekick Alfino is always like, oh, you're the best. Like
right. Yeah.
Always just loving up on you. So I think they do a good job of at least owning it. In that regard, WoW does a terrible job because the prime example of what you're saying is like the King of Stormwind, Varian Wrynn, the old king before his son took over. He's just like known as like just the coolest, most just bad A person of all time. He's got these two swords. Champion of the Alliance. Because there were books and lore written about him. But basically, he was just like a slave forever. And he became friends with orcs. So like he's real cool, you know, real tough guy. But realistically, didn't really do anything besides just be the lost King of Stormwind, which is cool, and then found. Meanwhile, you killed elemental lords. You killed all the old gods.
Dragons.
You literally, you slew Deathwing. Like, you've just ended every single threat that ever came upon this planet. And every new expansion, it's like, we're going to give you a new title now, you know? Yeah. Law Walker or whatever it was before. Like,
And it's like, you get to the new place and you're an unknown person again. You're back.
Yeah, you're unknown. And they're always, and the guy in this expansion, the main, they're always like, how can he walk through the mall? It's like, because I'm just the player. All
don't
right?
you know who I am?
There's no good like explanation.
Yeah, it's not written very well.
And I think that's why a lot of people who are into the story and stuff are getting sick of it, because that's why a lot of people want to return back to the roots of WoW or just being an adventurer. Like, I just want to explore a new world in a video game. And I'm okay with killing boars and wolves if that's fun. You know, it's rewarding. It's adventure. It could still be fun. But at this point, it's so far gone that it's like, I don't know. The story is an atrocity in WoW. I don't think, though, in books, the one book example that I know of is the book series starts with Magician by Raymond D. Feist. One of my favorite book series of all time. But it starts out with Pug, who is just like this little nerdy kid. And then as you read the books, he becomes like the strongest person in existence. And everyone knows it. He's so strong that he like just gives up basically because there's nothing to challenge him, I think, by the end. Like it just becomes this existential crisis. But throughout the books, it progresses so well that it's believable. And then when there's enough power creep to where he is the most powerful person ever, ever to be known, he himself takes himself out of the game because he's like, I'm just too good for this. And he knows it, which is fine, I guess. You know, if you've won, you've won the game.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I guess, I mean, one way to look at it, I guess, like counterpointing myself is like the things you do, not everybody knows you do them. So when you save the world, only a select group of people knew the threat, I guess. And that's how they can get around it. Like only 100 people knew that this was that bad of a thing that's going to happen. And we saved it before it got out. So you go unthanked, right? Because they didn't know. I read a book series a while ago called The Cycle of Iran. And it's really good. And I guess that's kind of the same thing, that the main character becomes this very strong, like necromancer type of character. And he's the hero. But he keeps saving the world over and over and over again. But like the ways he does it, nobody knows it's happening. Nobody knows the end of the world is coming. And yeah. He kind of like stops it before it happens, before mass destruction is laid out. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, well, you saved us, great, but we didn't know it was going to happen. So it's kind of that, like, you know, if a tree falls in the woods, you know, like we don't know. We don't know what's happening.
Nobody knew.
Good job, bud, I guess. I mean, I didn't feel threatened at all.
So yeah.
I could, yeah, that less. could be a counterpoint, but I think that's more anecdotal, like depending on the story. Like, I think that is a good point. But when it comes to like if we talk about WoW, everybody knew Deathwing because like, he tore the world apart. So everybody, rich and poor, knew about Deathwing. And I'm sure everybody found out that you know, killed him.
Right. Like at that point, everybody knows what's going on. And I think it's got to be
the same with like the Lich King, you know, all that. It's like there's no way they just lived in the world.
Massive plague throughout the entire world at the Lich King time.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, yeah, OK, he's the bad guy. Everybody knows.
Yeah. So everybody knows it.
Yeah. I guess they didn't do a good job at that. Like if you're not going to be remembered for what you do, then people shouldn't know the things you're doing. I guess is the takeaway there.
Right.
Like you're doing it to save everybody, whether or not they know you're doing it.
Yeah.
I guess that's where the hero part comes in.
I think there's another discussion to be had too, as to like, does it even matter in a game like WoW, where the point is just to kill the biggest, baddest thing? Like it matters to the lore nerds, yes, but like I don't know, like is the discussion worth having? Or like, you know, I think it is because I love story and I love all that. But I think when it comes to like Dungeons and Dragons, so back to what we're building here, this world, really, I think it comes down to something so simple mechanically as don't give players magical items like ever or hardly ever. Yeah. Like in our campaign, I just recently got my first magic item and we've been at it for almost 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like this magic whip. Like it's not even that great.
That cool. Yeah.
I still use my regular two-handed axe because I'm a barbarian.
Yeah.
But like that kind of reduces the power creep. And then spend more time in the intimate details of just like the people, the small people doing small things and slowly thread that along.
Yeah.
But you can still keep it interesting. So, but just don't give players these overwhelmingly powerful items, you know, as right. a quest reward at level one.
Very good. Very good, I say. All right. Well, I think that wraps up that conversation.
Yeah.
And now we're going to get into the world building a little more.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, thanks to Regulus RPG for chiming in.
Yes, Regulus. You're a gentleman or gentlewoman. Who knows?
Who knows? I don't.
Let's see here. The words. I have the words. And if you're ready, I'll give you the first one.
I'm ready. Let's get into it.
The first one is craft.
Craft. Mac and cheese.
With a C, though.
Hmm. No, oh, let's see. Well, now I'm really stumped. Crafting. So are we going to talk about crafting or some crafts
war
that people have?
Warcraft.
Or Warcraft or Spellcraft?
Yeah, crafting. I like in all RPGs that you can play, like a video game and in MMOs, you can pick up a trade skill. And a lot of them are crafting. So you can be a tailor, you can be a cloth worker, a weaver, whatever they call, or a blacksmith, you know, that kind of thing. In Dungeons and Dragons, you can also do those things. You can be proficient in, like, with tools and with stuff, you know, have knowledge about that kind of thing. I don't know where I'm going with this. Just saying there's crafting available.
I've never, our campaign, we don't do that. We don't dive into to crafting and stuff. Just because that's not what we really are interested in. So I'm not really sure how it works from a D&D perspective.
It's just a one-on-one with a DM, very intimate. You guys are just rolling off together. It's like, okay, now I hammer the plate. Roll. Yeah. Okay, I got a 16. Great. Good job. You did a good
hit. I dip it into the water to cool it.
It's a very intimate session, but very interactive.
It's like watching Patrick Swayze in Ghost.
Yeah, you're just guiding your hands, and you're just rolling every time. You're striking the fire, and it's like, all right, that was a good, oh, that wasn't a very good hit. So your armor takes, you know, minus 1 point of durability or something, you know, like, wouldn't that be fun?
Interesting method of crafting.
And it's only on off nights, not on the main campaign night. It's on off night. You just, you know, zoom your DM and be like, hey, I want to craft something right now. And he's like, all right, let's get to work.
What a one-on-one craft session.
Start crafting.
I would not participate. It's not something I want to do.
All right, that's fair enough.
But we can include a craft in our world. I mean, we've talked about how on, I think on the first episode of this Ardia series, we talked about poetry being the method in which spells are cast.
Yep.
So that you, we could weave that into some sort of type of craft, kind of like a bard, you know, would consider themselves writers. They're, you know, the craft of making music, or the craft of making spells or casting spells. Or we could do, what else have we talked about? We've talked about how, what's his name? Trigger. Trigger is a gunsmith. That's a craft.
Yep. He crafts weaponry.
Yeah. That would basically just be like an engineer, I think.
Yeah. And then we have some blacksmiths we've talked about. So the goblin one.
Mm-hmm. The goblin one and our main man, Laszlo.
Yep.
In the Pale City is a blacksmith as well. So they exist. And then also isn't, I forgot about this one. The character that we made from our mother. Didn't we make her a tailor?
Yep. She's a tailor. She runs Umbra, a shop. Right? Yeah. A clothing shop that makes the best clothes around.
Yeah. They're infused with Meritite a little bit. The cloth armor. Yeah, that's right.
The Meritite seamstress.
Yeah.
That's cool. Oh, we also have the whole alchemy guild as well.
Yes. So
there's that happening too.
The school of alchemy. So there's a lot of, we have a lot of crafts already built into the world.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to like make another craft that's specific to Ardia?
Yeah. Or, like I was thinking of that right now, like what we could do, like, you know, like soul craft, you know, something that doesn't, it's not real. It's not a real thing, but we can create something like that. So it's like people that can harness the essence of Phoenix dust or something in the air and, I don't know, do something with it. That seems like a lot to think about.
That is a lot to think about. Here's one idea. Back to the spellcraft thing, but it kind of mixes in that. So from what I remember, we've talked about the spells being basically, if you can learn words from the ancient Paragon language and use those words, you use those words in poetry form to cast spells. And that's how they like rediscover these spells that were lost. So what if we make it, you can call it a craft to where maybe they can collect some sort of magical like Leviathan or Phoenix essence of some sort somehow, mm-hmm. and combine that with the words they know. And it's kind of like an inventor would just trial and error until they can make a new spell using like, I use these two words and a little bit of dust and boom, nothing happens. So like strike that off the list and then try again.
Okay.
And so it would be just this endless combination. Cause if you think about like the English language and then a pinch of salt, it's like you could use any two words and then a pinch of salt. Nothing would happen probably until you find out, you know, abracadabra and then swoosh, boom, magic.
Abracadabra, swoosh.
Yep. It turns out those are the magic words. But that could definitely be a craft.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Specific to our world.
You know, what just came to my mind as you were talking about that is there's a book called Name of the Wind. I don't think you've read it.
No.
It's a very good book. And a lot of people have read it. And I bet people who listen to this have read it and love it. In that book, there's this like a bar and kind of like a stage situation where it's a like a theater where the best musicians of all the world go to play and to just show, but you have to like earn your spot there. It's a very, very competitive place to get in and to be able to perform on stage there. So It's very, very competitive. And in my mind, I'm thinking it would be so cool to have a place like that in Umbra where it's like this very, very high class, the barrier to entry is super high to get in and let alone to just get in the door, but let alone to perform there would be crazy. But it's not so much a performance art. It's more of the best spell crafters of all the land come here to like train and study. And then eventually they can perform their spells on this stage. It's kind of like the debut stage for these spells where the best minds of the world are here and watching and learning and like collaborating with each other. But so it's very like musical, right? It's very poetic and musically charged. Maybe there is a lot of music playing while they're doing it. It's a performance, you know, they're trying to sell their spell. You know, it's like this guy made a rabbit coming out of a hat. It's like, okay, that's not great. But if you put it on a backdrop with tons of music and very nice poetry happening, it's like, okay, that gets much cooler. You know, the better you present your rabbit coming out of your hat.
Yeah.
So it's a place like that where it's a spectacular place, very hard to get into. Only the brightest and the best are usually there, like slumming around. And it's this bar and scene where people just hang out and talk about spellcrafting. And they get presented with these really cool new spells that people have put together. But it is like a theater performance when it happens.
Okay. And it's a theater performance to eventually try and sell like the spell or make themselves famous off of it.
I guess it would just be like, that's maybe not to sell or get famous, just to like, that's their way. Like the art of presenting is so important to the spell. It's not just like you say the words and it happens. You got to give it to it. So it's like, you have to like perform this act to make the spell happen.
Yeah.
So they're putting on this, you know, this is what the best in the world looks like when the spell is done correctly. And then they learn from it. It's like a teaching learning thing, but it's very theatrical.
Okay. Yeah. 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 I like that. So it is basically, yeah, it is like called the spellcraft. So they come and perform at America's Got Talent. Umbra's Got Talent.
There's judges and not maybe not judges, but there's a lot of very, very high society people that not just high society, not just like rich people, but like a lot of very smart spell people are there. So a lot of famous bards, a lot of famous wizards are there like working together to create these new things.
Yeah. And essentially it'd be a collection of people who are the most familiar with the language too. Because the more words you know,
the
more
spells
you can
probably
cast. So like people from the
tower who read books all day, you know, the curator's there. He has a pass. He can just come in and just chill.
Yeah.
and like people can ask him questions and he can like help people out kind of a thing. But it's this society of just creating magic to be used in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's kind of cool because this whole thing, according to the lore of our world, this whole thing is a rediscovery of this magic because they can only assume that all this stuff was already known to these people before. So they're rediscovering it. And like, this is how it's done. This is how they did this, probably. And I really like the idea too, going back to EverQuest, some of the spell names referenced like characters, right? Like there was Alcabor.
It's a person's thing. Yeah. He made it.
Like yeah. He made that thing. And I think that would be cool too, to include like down the line, if we make spells that are unique to this, there would be spells that would be named after somebody, you know?
Like, yeah. Cause in EverQuest, almost all of the, if like a majority, I'd say like 70% of all of the songs that a bard can learn.
Yeah.
Are attributed to somebody like, you know, somebody's.
CeeLo's Accelerando.
Yeah, like somebody's song. And that is super cool. I do agree.
Yeah, that's really cool because that gives you a free like lore bit that you can go down a rabbit hole of like, who was this anyways?
Yeah, all these famous guys referenced in their magic.
Yeah. And that's so this place is kind of where they made their name. So they invented this, basically they rediscovered this spell. And then they figured it out, they mastered it, and then they present it at this place. And this is where like everyone's like, that is Steve's spell of, you know, summoning or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. And I also really like the idea of, yes, they're rediscovering, quote unquote, all the stuff that the past societies knew. But also I think that because of the perfection and the knowledge and the advancements of that society, of the people who lived in Paragon, like they would often overlook imperfection and say, it's just not worth our time. So I like the idea of having a lot of these spells be like spells that are not perfect. They're very flawed, but they are efficient and they do work. And they're like new discoveries because they are kind of imperfect.
Yeah, because they were just tossed out before.
Yeah, they're like, no, that'll never work because this thing is wrong. Like, technically, this is wrong. So, like, if you look at, like, blues piano or jazz piano even, like, a lot of people, if you were talking about perfect piano playing, you'd be like, no, that's wrong. Those notes don't go in that succession, right? It's like, right. You can't play that way. It's wrong. But then if you ask blues, because I know it's beautiful. Like if you play that, it sounds wrong, but it's wrong on purpose. And that's why it's something. You know, yeah. That's why it's a thing. And that makes it not wrong anymore. So in the old days, they would just toss it out. But now it's like, okay, this technically is wrong, but it's right. but it works.
Yeah, that's really cool. So like the ancient Paragon people were like the Bachs and the Mozarts, but then
the people nowadays
are gritty in the 1940s New York.
Yeah, exactly.
Playing piano in a smoky bar.
Yeah, where people are like, that's garbage, that's trash, that's just noise. Like it's not a thing. But then you have all these people coming to hear that. And it's like, no, this is what we want to hear. This is cool stuff. This is new.
Yeah. These people look at a Jackson Pollock painting and think that's beauty. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the Renaissance times, they would have looked at that and said a monkey did it.
Yeah, so, like, what is this garbage?
This is crap. I painted the Sistine Chapel. You tell me to look at these these colors on a palette and say this is good?
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah, it's that same vibe. So I like that a lot, like having imperfection being the thing that people strive for. And that's fun. That's a fun angle. To come
at
it.
Because then you could, then you'd have to think of spells that kind of really, fit that mold.
Because perfection is only defined by people, right? Like what I think perfect is different than what you think perfect is.
Right.
So like I could be wrong and you could be wrong, you know?
The only example I can think of right now is that comes to my mind is if the Paragon people were like kind of how I'm imagining them, if they only used like absolute perfect spells, like the ultimas of spells, they would only like in order to fight battles, it would only be an instant death spell or like an instant evaporation. Like why do a damage spell? Why would I cast fire on you when I could just cast disintegrate and you're just gone?
I have death. So
there's no need for any other spell if I can just one shot you. You know, like that's the type of polarization that that's what they're talking about. Yeah. And so, but nowadays, or like to a lesser degree, a spell that would just cut you 100 times. But nowadays we'd use that because now us imperfect people, we love to torture. We don't want to kill sometimes. We just want to injure or, yeah, you know, exactly. things like that. So a spell that would cut you 100 times would be immensely useful. And also we don't know the disintegrate spell. So
yeah, we don't know that because again, we aren't perfect. We're probably never going to figure that spell out. You know, the Ultima, we're not going to find it because we just can't comprehend what they were at.
Right. Yeah, the ultimate spell of world ending that they did cast on themselves.
Yes,
one did, but we'll never get to that. So yeah, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. Do we have a name for this place?
So I'm still a little lost on like how it's not a bar, right? It's a much bigger.
There is a bar in there.
Okay,
but
so
it's
what
like
I'm
a very,
thinking,
very fancy bar, very fancy place.
What I'm thinking of when you were explaining that was like the Globe Theater in England. It's a very old fashioned like Shakespearean theater, but it's big, but it's like open. It's got a stage, a nice amphitheater, and I'm sure down below there's like drinks and stuff like that. But its main attraction is like it's the Globe, so it's a theater
open,
first,
I'm
but it's an open face theater.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I thought of first. And it's a place that like anybody can go take a seat, watch the performances as they happen. Very like down to earth for all the people type of thing.
Okay. Yeah. So it is. Okay. So performances are for everyone, but the actual like backstage stuff is only for the highest of minds can be, you know, presenting and in the back doing
right the people who can do the presenting you still have to pass like a test to be able not a test but like you got to have the qualifications to present. Not any schmuck can get up on the stage.
Yes, but then yeah, there is like I'm looking at the picture now and it's super cool. I'd love this. Love how it's open.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, in the bottom, like in one of the kind of indoor areas, there would be a like stand where they sell food and drink because this is like a venue for people to come enjoy. So
yeah,
I would imagine there's stuff like that in there.
Yeah, like in the back area or something, just put a little bar, some drinks, some food.
Yeah, but it is kind of more high society in here because, you know, this isn't for everyone. Just like today's day and age, the theater is not for everyone. And when you go, you're not expected to, but a lot of people do get dressed up. They get fancied up, you know, a little bit when they go to the theater because it's a night out and
there's
it's
certain etiquette too. Yeah.
Yeah. There's the etiquette for going to the theater. So, I mean, I'm not talking about the movie theater. I'm talking about like a play theater.
Maybe it's just like that too, where it's like, it's not everybody's interest because some people find it stuffy and boring, you know, like going to like a theater to see a play.
Yeah. These posh people just giving like spoken word. I don't want to see that.
Yeah. But in reality, like anybody can pay for a ticket and go and, but some people would like it. Some people would absolutely hate it. So here it's only people who are interested in like the language would really go. But if you don't understand anything or don't care about the Paragon language, you're like, it's just people showing off fancy tricks. Like,
not for me.
I'm good.
Not for me.
Yeah.
I don't want to get 1,000 cuts. I don't want that.
Yeah. I don't want that.
Don't want it. Cool. I really like this place. This is fun.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. So this is in Umbra.
This is in Umbra. Yeah, this is another place that they have. So write that down. And so don't forget.
Furiously writing.
Create a really cool place in Umbra. Okay.
Yeah.
I have another question. Well, I wrote two questions down before this, and then the power creep thing just happened.
All right.
So here's what I want to talk about now. Instead of going to the second word, I want to talk about the horseman situation we had kind of really wanted to get into. So in the Pale City, we described the Pallid King as the pale horse, the rider on the pale horse. So... and that is death, the final horseman.
Okay.
So not plague, not famine, and not war. He is death. So because he wants to eventually bring death to a lot of people. So that's his thing.
To the world, yeah.
And we had talked about putting a pale horse situation in each of the towns. So as like the bad guy of the town or, you know, something that ties it to them.
Mm-hmm.
So Umbra, I was looking over the remaining three horses. Okay. I'm not sure which one we should give to it, but let's see what we think.
Okay.
So we got rid of the pale horse. We have the black horse, the red horse, and the white horse. And just to sum up for myself and for anyone else who does not know what they stand for, the red horse is often taken to represent war. He's often holding a sword upwards, ready for battle or mass slaughter. That's the red horse.
Okay.
The black horse is popularly understood to be famine, as he carries a pair of balances or weighing scales, indicating the way that bread would have been weighed during a famine.
Okay.
So there's that. Other people have interpreted him as the Lord, as lawgiver, because he does hold scales.
Uh-huh.
So that's another angle. And then we have the white horse, which has a couple different interpretations. One is the Antichrist, one is also war, and then one is disease or pestilence. So a couple ways we can go with this. And a couple of ways that we can attack our Umbra city here. So
right off the bat, I want to say that Umbra is famine. Because of what we are starting to lean into with the priestess not receiving visions anymore.
Oh, right. Things are getting a little bad there.
So things are building up to a famine, essentially, because we talked about how there may be some quests where the crops are dying and they don't know why, and so you're going to discover it. And so famine is something that's coming down the pike for these umbral citizens.
Okay, so that is the black horse.
Yeah, that's what I would say. The only question we have to answer is why that's happening. Why is there no more... why is she no longer receiving visions? And if we want to make it into a singular bad guy, we'd have to put in something that is interfering between her and Leviathan.
Ooh, I like that. I like that right there a lot.
Some entity that is interfering.
Yeah.
And that also leads me to, this doesn't have to be the bad guy, but our time traveler friend probably has something to do with him. In a major way.
Kind of like my world died, yours is going to die too.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Because he came from a parallel future, I guess.
Yeah.
Where the famine happened and ended his civilization. And so I think he would come here. He doesn't know why he came here at first, but then I think he quickly realizes it. And he would be the one to identify what that bad guy would be. To our players.
So he's kind of the guide here. He knows what's going to happen. And if you believe him and talk to him, he can guide you to kind of, these are the signs to look for, because he knew the person in his world that did it. Eventually it comes out, you know, like this person is causing this problem.
Yeah.
So he doesn't know exactly who, because people and faces are mixed up in this world.
Yeah.
Because it's a different dimension. People do different things.
Right.
But he does know it's going to happen.
Yeah. He knows that it's coming down to happen to us.
Yeah. Well. I really like that. There's somebody interfering with the connection.
Yeah.
It's like when you turn a microwave on and then your Wi-Fi stops in your house.
Okay. Interesting comparison.
It happens to me all the time.
I've never had that happen.
Well, it used to happen because my router is in my room and then I'm in my office. And when I was not hardwired with the landline, I was on Wi-Fi, and every time someone turned the microwave on, my signal would just die.
That reminds me of the good old days whenever we would like get a phone call and
kicked out
of the game or something. I remember you got so mad one time because you were in a pretty serious Team Fortress match. And I think that like I had wanted to play something as well. And you were so mad. He's like, no, mom, tell him you can't.
I mean, I can imagine. Imagine being like on a pro team for something. And then your little brother said, hey, he has to stop playing because I want to go do something else. And it's like, no, I'm in a professional match. It's ridiculous.
Well,
yeah.
It's like us.
I don't remember that, but I could see it happening because I was in it. I was way into it.
I do remember that.
That was good times. I was pro athlete, pro esport athlete before it became popular.
You were 15 years too early.
I know. I always tell people if I was born when my kids were born, man, I'd be set for success. I would have been a professional esport player.
Mm. In what sport now? In what game now? Do you think?
Well, I mean, if Team Fortress obviously would be out now as a professional game, I don't know. Probably any of them. I'm that good. Any game today. Any game today, I would compete. If I was a 15-year-old today, I would be cracked, as the kids say.
Yeah, I'm cracked. I'm cracked.
But, I mean, I'm pretty good now, and I'm 35. So,
yeah,
that's saying something. I mean, pretty good. I'm pretty dumpster in most games, actually, but I used to be good. I'm not good anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
What were you talking about?
I could see myself being a professional league player.
Professional League of Legends
player. If I was a young lad making millions.
Yeah, and had no other things to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways.
Those were good days. Those were good days.
Anyways, so you were going back to the microwave cutting off the Wi-Fi, just like our bad guy cuts off the...
Yep, cuts off the Wi-Fi to the gods.
The Wi-Fi from our priestess to the gods.
The revelation Wi-Fi.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So we need to create a baddie. I don't know if we need to do it a second, but that's the path we're on.
Yeah.
To create this person that's in the way.
But I like it being famine, back to the four horsemen. I think famine is fitting.
Okay, so that is actually going to be our second word. Because I had just in place like horseman word for the second word. So famine, we're just going to whoop, put it right in there.
Famine was the second word.
Yeah. So famine.
Yeah, I think that fits really smoothly and easily into our narrative that we've already built.
Yeah. Cool. Do we want to talk more about that or do we want to go on to word three?
Let's go to word three because we're pushing our time. So
yeah, we're getting there. And I also have another question that I may or may not ask.
Yeah, let's do it.
But I'll do word three. Word number three is savage.
Savage. Okay.
I'm savage. I don't know if the kids say that.
No, I maybe, but I hate the use of that word. Like when somebody says like, oh, he's a savage.
Why?
Like, well, no, he's not.
he's actually not a savage. Very trained, respectable individual. he's very good at his job.
Yeah. Like, when they say that as somebody's like skill level or, you know, they go to the gym and they can bench press whatever. And you're like, he's a savage.
I wonder why that became a thing. Like, who said that first?
Because,
like, you know, people say opposites. They used to like, that's a bad man. But when they're saying like he's really good, that's something. Bad. Oh, he bad.
Oh, he bad.
But like savage means like, what does it even mean? Let's look it up.
I'm looking it up now, and a lot of it has to do with like animals or nature, right?
Uncontrolled.
So, yeah. Fierce, violent, aggressively hostile, severe, primitive. Or this is the one that's probably back in the good old days was most common. Not the good old days, more the adventuring the days, I guess.
Savage days.
Primitive and uncivilized. So people would call, like, I guess, like the Native Americans or something, savages, right? Like when we were when we were out here in America manifesting destiny.
That's what I call my children.
They're savages.
A bunch of savages just throwing mud at each other and then eating with dirty hands.
It makes me think of like Tarzan or something like that. Like,
yeah, what's his name? A savage.
The main bad guy is probably called Tarzan a savage. The British guy. I don't know. So
savages.
Savages. That's like what I think of how it should be used is the definition there. The term savages is like you're looking at other people and you're like, they're savages. Not looking at a dude that you admire and be like, oh, he's a savage, bro.
The only savage I think of is, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I tried to avoid it. I didn't. It immediately came to my mind. And
that's
I just
the only one.
Sidestepped, but.
Yep. The macho man.
Macho man, yeah. I'm at the top of the mountain. Only halfway up. Anyways, so. Yeah, so that's. So when we talk about savage, I'm thinking like barbarian type of people.
Yeah.
Or if we look at our world map, we basically described the Dragonwild over there in Ysera's Scar as savage. That's like a savage land. Also, the Shaded Isles, I think, are fairly savage, meaning the people there and the animals and denizens are not very civilized.
Yeah.
They're not going to be bartering with you or speaking the ancient tongue.
Right. They're not really interested in any of that.
Nope. They're just killing and surviving.
It's like people who don't really care or know of anything about the world outside of their own thing.
Yeah. Because they're in such a hostile, harsh environment, they kind of have to be.
Yeah.
Over here, we've kind of, like in Umbra and in the main continent, they've kind of tamed it to a certain extent. To where they can live somewhat comfortably, whereas over there it's not there yet. Mm-hmm. So it's savage.
Okay. So do we want to talk about that, or do we want to talk about something else that's savage?
We could talk about. I would like to talk about possibly like a tribe of people that live nearby. That some would consider savages. Like I'm thinking that maybe we bring in a trade route with Umbra and somebody on the Shaded Isles, or somebody over that big settlement in to the south in Ysera's Scar. Maybe like the Umbran people consider them savages, but they still do some trade with them. So maybe there's something there that we could talk about. Maybe there's a quest or something to that effect that
takes you to the savage lands.
The savage lands.
That's how they refer to it.
They call it the savage lands. Yeah, that's definitely possible. I feel like I've heard that somewhere before, but we could definitely use that. I mean,
probably, yeah. It's probably in all the games ever.
Yeah, it's happened everywhere. But that's what I think of. Or we just go all in and we make a character based off of the Macho Man Randy Savage, which would then force every DM to practice their Randy Savage impersonation before they run this campaign.
That's great. Yeah. There's a text.
Which I think is a necessary skill.
In the book that will say you have to voice him as Randy Savage. Here's some links to YouTube videos so you can practice.
Here's some YouTube videos. Here's some other impersonations. Start practicing.
Yeah. Start practicing because you've got to do it. If you don't do it, we're going to revoke all your rights.
Yeah, you're no longer a DM. You got to be filled with the spirit of the Macho Man.
Yeah.
In this character, whatever he is in Umbra.
Yeah.
I don't know who it would be, but.
I don't know.
Somebody. Maybe the innkeeper. So it's like unavoidable.
Is he more? Yeah. Is he more like that? Is he just real hyped up all the time?
That actually might fit pretty well. Because again, in my mind, it's like Braum from League of Legends, this big kind of oafy character. Mm-hmm. But you give him the Macho Man voice. That might be kind of fun.
Yeah. That would be way fun, actually. And like, if you've ever watched interviews where he's on like late shows and stuff, you could tell he's still himself, but he is more mellowed out and he's more just chill kind of a guy.
Yeah.
So it does fit. Like, he can just be there talking to people, but if somebody gets in his face, he gets all, oh yeah.
That's when he really he kicks it into gear.
Yeah.
Like, coming into my bar. Yeah.
Yeah. People start really going after him. So he gets all hyped up.
You're just trying to have a nice drink, yeah. You walk in here.
That would be great. I would love to hear other people's impersonations. I love Randy Savage impersonations. They're good.
The best. They're so funny. That would be a great contest that we will do at some point in the future.
It's your best Randy Savage, and it'll be featured on the podcast.
Yeah, we'll play an audio clip of your Randy Savage impersonation. But
an audio clip of him as the barkeep, the innkeeper, not just him like doing a radio show. Him as the innkeeper, and something happens in the end. So,
got to be in character.
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for. So send them in. Send them in to us. Have a contest.
And for those of you, I don't know. Hopefully, there's some people who. Hopefully everybody knows who the Macho Man Randy Savage is at this point in the podcast.
Well, they don't know. Just look it up. I mean, how do you not know? Unless you're very young or don't like wrestling at all.
I mean, but even then, I don't really like wrestling. I think it's kind of stupid, but you
grew up in the era of big time wrestling. Like that's all you needed to do.
Yeah.
So like now you just needed to be alive. Yeah. It's not so big anymore. So. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's not been any characters like him. Like, maybe people would recognize The Rock back in his era and the way that he did things, but it wasn't as easily identifiable.
Yeah. Like that era of, you know, Macho Man, Hulk Hogan, all those guys, it's, you never forget. It's like all the wrestlers that seemingly come after is like, yeah, you're just another guy who has muscles and throwing people around. You gotta have the character to succeed in the biz. You gotta be an actor because that's what it is. So you gotta really sell your commit.
You're playing your persona. Character. Yeah, exactly.
It's like you're method acting 24/7 your whole career.
while at the same time doing steroids all the time. And lifting weights a ton. So
yeah, it's like, you know, not, you're just riding in the line between life and death on a heart attack, motorcycle.
Yeah.
It's like, who knows?
Yep. You're walking on a fine thread and you're probably doing cocaine. Like,
your mental state, it's tough. That's got to be
tough. It's not great. You are just one straw away from breaking the camel's back. But that's the way that the Macho Man lived. And that's. Why we need to put some respect on his name.
Yeah, just the man. Okay.
So are we going to stick with that? Because I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I love it. I love him our being innkeeper. That okay. persona. He just gets wild.
It seems so fitting, too, because he was like a protector, a big, strong guy. But then he just talks like the Macho Man.
Yeah.
Yes.
And eventually we need to have a Ultimate Warrior situation where there's his nemesis, you know, like in the ring, who comes out and is like, who visits every now and then, and they just start going at it. And then at the end of the day, they just like bro, shake it off, and then he leaves.
They're just bros. Yeah. Somebody who sounds like Hulk Hogan comes in, starts talking crap,
walks in.
They brawl it out, and then
that would be good.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a great idea.
Okay, great, very good, very good. So that, I'm not going to ask the question I had because I feel like it'll be a conversation. We'll save it for next time. It'll be a good one.
Thrilling.
A little suspense for you. A little suspense. Yeah. Another good conversation starter for next episode. You have anything else you want to say?
No, I'm good.
He's good, everybody.
That's all I have.
Just like that, we want to thank you for tuning in to another episode with us. And thank you for your time and your attention and your support. Thank you for all those things. And please share it with your friends and families and everybody that you hold dear or don't, so that they can enjoy this as well.
Yeah. If you hate the podcast, share it with your most hated enemies.
Yeah, tell them, like, listen to this dumb podcast.
Yeah. Just, like, you'll like this podcast because you're dumb.
Yeah, try to get them to waste an hour of their lives listening to this. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Anyway.
Perfect.
Where else? That's it for us. We will see you next time.
Okay, bye-bye.